Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Hey, what up, boxing fans? This is the Rope and Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday afternoon. Kind of strange, but, you know, the schedule gets in the way. Sometimes life just gets in the way. Anyway, we got a shortened show tonight, so I'm just going to kind of – today. I'm so used to saying tonight. So I'm just going to kind of get right to what we're going to cover. Of course, we got to start with Joshua – knocking out Povetkin, Anthony Joshua, in a really competitive fight through six rounds, gets the job done. We'll start with recap from that. We'll also cover a fight from Japan that's literally one of the best fights of the year. We'll also catch you up with some showbox as well. We'll definitely look forward to this weekend as well. Actually, Friday at like noon Central, just so everybody knows, in the States, at noon Central, and that would probably be about 6 o'clock a.m., I believe. Something like that. No, actually, what am I saying? That'd be 6 p.m. UK time. Anyway, 12 o'clock Central time for George Groves versus Callum Smith for the World Boxing Super Series Final at Super Middleweight coming up. We'll also preview Showbox in the PBC on FS1. That's Friday and Sunday. There's some other cards that we'll talk about coming up as well. Obviously, we'll cover some news. Wilder and Fury is a done deal for December 1st. I think next week, October 1st, is the kickoff for the press conference. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the rumored fights or fighters on the pay-per-view undercard. We'll kind of fill you in as far as Canelo's next fight. So December 15th is the reserve date. The WBC has a convention coming up here soon. So we're going to find out fairly soon just exactly what's going to happen. We'll fill you in there. We'll talk about a variety of other news and notes that's out there, some good fights that potentially are about to be made. We'll fill you in on Canelo and Golovkin 2, the report card as far as the financials, and a couple other things on the way. If this is your first time listening to the Rope and Dope Radio Podcast, you can check it out right here live and on archive. It streams live on blogtalkradio.com/Rope and Dope Radio, and it also archives, like I said. It's basically the headquarters. But I'm also available, or it's also available on iTunes, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network. You can stream the podcast through there on Spotify, also available on iHeartRadio. So, check out thegruelingtruth.net. It's boxing, it's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's everything in between. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, mybookie.ag. So you can head on over to thegruelingtruth.net, read an article. I do boxing articles there along with football and basketball. And you can listen to a podcast right there. And hey, while you're at it, place a bet. It'll link you right to mybookie.ag. So let's get in to the gravy, shall we? Let's get right into it. Obviously, Anthony Joshua, Alexander Povetkin in front of I believe they made it to 80,000. They didn't quite sell it out at 90,000, but that's still pretty damn good. Obviously, you know, losing 10,000 tickets is not a great thing, especially when you're going to open it up, what they say, 100,000. They're going to add 10,000 in April for his next fight, Joshua's next fight. So, still a great, great atmosphere, great crowd, no doubt about it. I'm going to get into the DAZN stuff in just a little bit as far as my experience with the app and whatnot. But the first round was, I thought Povetkin won that round. You know, Joshua landed a couple of rights to the body the last minute or so. But right hands and hooks, and especially like a left, I think it was a left hook that broke, or maybe it was a right hand. Can't remember exactly what broke, but either way, Povetkin broke Anthony Joshua's nose the last little bit. I think it was an uppercut and a late left hand. He landed the bigger shots, basically, in round one, and he broke his nose. He kind of stumbled him. I'm not sure if he was really hurt, Joshua. But he could have been an off-balance minor league too, but it definitely stumbled him. Round two was close. That could have went either way. Very close round. Some early left hooks and right hands by Povetkin. You could see Joshua, you know, his nose was bleeding fairly bad at that time. Not crazy, where it was just gushing, but it you know, you could see it was a problem. Joshua was landing jabs to the body and the head. He, you know, snuck in a couple of right hands. I'd probably have to favor Povetkin in that second round, but it's tight. I have some question marks next to the scoring card. I just thought maybe he landed the bigger shots. Third round was even tighter, in my opinion. That could have been a 10-10 round if you thought Joshua got it. I can't really say much. I think Povetkin early and late did some damage. But Joshua answered back this time, and he actually added some movement in the third round and basically for the rest of the fight. The jab and the right hand, not just to the body, now when the head was starting to land. Fourth round, though, the jab and a few right hands were starting to really find a home for Joshua. I definitely gave him the fourth and basically gave him the rest of the fight, the fourth, fifth, sixth, and obviously he ended in the seventh. In that fourth round, there was a left – it was a left eye cut on Povetkin. And you could also see him make an adjustment, did Joshua, not just the movement, but he started putting his right hand up higher to block or at least get a hold of, you know, partially block or fully block Povetkin's left hooks that were doing some damage. Good little close to the round in round four, two-way action. But jabs mostly mixed with movement in the fifth got that round. For Joshua, same with the sixth. He did start, you know, attacking the body even more and landing left hooks up top. I thought he was doing a good job of resetting himself, moving around just subtly, but then kind of going right back in the pocket. There were a couple of exchanges down the stretch in the fourth and fifth, actually. Seventh round, though, I think right around midway round, big right hand definitely hurt Povetkin. You could just see it. Then he followed up with more left hooks and more right hands. And, he went down pretty hard, did Povetkin, and it was one of those where maybe the last couple of fights, especially the Takam fight for Joshua, how that people felt that was a little bit of an early stoppage. And generally speaking, comparative to the U.S. and the U.K., the U.S. fights, on average, last longer. They don't get stopped as earlier. Now, that's either a good thing or a bad thing. You know, I'm just bringing up a fact. I'm not really saying which side I'm on or whatever. Now, he got up. He definitely got up. But it could have maybe been stopped because he was stumbly. He was bumbly. He, like, fell through the ropes a little bit. Like I said, he showed hard he got up, but Povetkin was in bad shape. There was a couple more shots that kind of made him go off balance even more. He couldn't really find a solid footing. and he bounced off the ropes a little bit. They called it, and he was kind of stumbling backwards and ultimately spilled. He ultimately fell down. So I thought it was a good stoppage. Maybe in that moment he wasn't hit with something that hurt him worse, but the damage was done, in my opinion. I mean, like I said, the ref could have potentially stopped it just off what Povetkin was showing as far as no control over his body. You know, he fell through the ropes a little bit trying to get up, and he was in rough shape. So, tight fight. I had it about 3-3, potentially 3-2-1, you know, something like that in favor of Povetkin. Really tight fight. Competitive fight. First couple of rounds, the overhand rights and the left hooks and even the uppercuts. A little body, but mostly to the head from Povetkin, was definitely giving issues to Joshua. We know those right hands. He's been open for those for quite some time. I believe it was a right hand that, you know, broke his nose first round. But he did make the subtle movement adjustment, the reset adjustment. The right hand, you know, a little bit higher, looking to block some of those shots, or at least partially block some of those shots. So, all in all, a good fight, fun fight. And Joshua, in the end, had the power to finish him. And kudos to him. So he gave the hometown a great show, competitive fight, no doubt about it. And now in Anthony Joshua's last four fights, he sold right around 320,000, give or take, which is pretty crazy. Very impressive. Like I said, some people were giving him stick to, you know, because they didn't sell it out. But they did make a big deal of that, you know, the last couple of times, how it sold, you know, sold out in days or whatever. So, yeah, it only got to 80,000, but 80,000 is still a whole lot of tickets. So there's some things that Anthony Joshua says in that kind of has me scratching his head, no doubt about it. But all in all, you can't hate the guy and bring up, oh, they didn't sell 10,000 more tickets. There's, you know, plenty of attractions here that people really enjoy watching, fighters that can't even sell 10,000 tickets, let alone 80 or 90. So great performance there. But Povetkin definitely tested him. Joshua still, you know, a work in progress, really. But I did like some of the adjustments. As far as his next fight goes, now, Eddie Hearn is, he had a couple of interviews with IFL TV, and he talked about how there's no way Tyson Fury fight would be next because they have a two-way rematch clause. And the way he brings up the two-way rematch clause, it's almost like a shocker to him that a big fight like that would have a two-way rematch. To me, it's like, well, yeah, in a fight like this, it sounds like they split it 50-50. Well, then you should have a two-way rematch. It shouldn't be a funky rematch, you know what I mean, in this situation. So, you know, they think that there's no fight with Tyson Fury at this point. Even if he wins, he says he's going to have, you know, a rematch clause. But we don't know if it's a rematch clause that they could keep open for 9 months or it's an immediate rematch clause. We really don't have a clue. So it's tough to say much as of right now because we don't know a lot of the details. So anyway, you know, he also went on to say that, you know, Tyson Fury is the most boring, unentertaining fighter in this, that, and the third. And I don't know. I can kind of understand how he's not going to pump Tyson Fury up Eddie Hearn because he's not his promoter. But he was, you know, entertaining enough to sign a four-fight deal. You know what I mean? So he wanted to sign him, and now he says he's not ready to fight anybody of note. But yet he was only going to give him one kind of tune-up type fight. Then he was going to have to go to Tony Bellew or Dillian White soon after. So in his third fight, he'd have to fight Dillian White well, I guess it's okay for Tyson Fury under the Matchroom Sports to fight a third fight against Dillian White, but not against Deontay Wilder. So he also made it clear that Joshua's not going to wait around, that the negotiations have to be done before the December fight with Tyson Fury and Wilder. And I can understand it to an extent. You know, after that fight's done, the negotiations, as he even said, will take like 2 months or something like that. So I get that. I get the sentiment. I understand that it makes sense. Joshua says that, you know, early January after the first of the year, he's going to start training for an April 13th fight. He definitely has long-ass camps. He better be careful on overtraining, I'll say that. But anyway, it's, you know, I get it, but then the same breath, you're going to have to sweeten the pot, and it can't be just a flat fee. If you want this fight to happen, Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua, it can't be a flat fee. Even if you bump up, you know, the current offer, it still can't be a flat fee. You yourself says this is the biggest fight in the sport of boxing. So if it's the biggest fight in this Fury and Wilder fight's going to make it that much bigger, then guess what? You got to cut him in on some back-end money. You know, he keeps talking about lately that the $50 million that was offered to him is going to be peanuts. Well, if Joshua alone, if this fight takes place in the UK, you know, theoretically, with Wilder and, you know, if Wilder were to get by Fury, and Wilder and Joshua, April 13th, I think it is, if that fight happens there, you're telling us that Joshua by himself is going to make way more than $50 million? When, you know, this summer, you were saying maybe it makes $50 million, maybe 40, maybe 60. It just kind of double talk. You say this fight's going to be so much bigger now, and you're happy Fury and Wilder are fighting, but yet you're not going to offer, you know, a split. And so that fight didn't happen for September, Wilder and Joshua. We know that. That's old news. But Wilder adjusted, and so did Joshua. But Joshua fought September, so he's going to have to know that his adjustment, you know, is not the same as Wilder. Wilder had to adjust too, and now he's fighting in December. You know, it's harder to sell a pay-per-view over here, so they got to really plan it out. December 1st is the date. We'll get into that. So my whole thing is, if it's going to make it bigger and Wilder potentially could make himself bigger, so could Fury, obviously, on both sides of the pond, you know, pay-per-view-wise as well, you at least have to find out what those numbers are for the UK and for the US and the gate and stuff like that before, you know, you can just offer them another million and a half or something. You know what I mean? It makes no sense for Wilder or Fury, especially Wilder, to sign a fight with Anthony right now, because he's going to become a bigger name off this fight. Even Eddie Hearn says so. So therefore, the negotiations leverage is different. I'm not saying it has to be 50-50. The amount of money you're going to make next April is going to be peanuts, you know, or $50 million is peanuts compared to what you say you're going to now make when you weren't saying you were going to make that before. It's just kind of misleading. You know, it's like, well, which one is it, dude? You know, so I don't think that I would love it if they could get the deal done before December, but without opening up percentage points, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. As far as the DAZN thing, I have the month trial until August 25th, I believe. So I actually watched the fight replay. I watched a random recorded stream. Then I watched the replay last night. And I signed up for it Tuesday morning, actually. So Tuesday I signed up for my month. That way I actually get a full month, and I talked about this last week, how Billy Joe Saunders is Andre. Technically, if you sign up for it, you're going to have to cancel. If you want it free for a month and all those fights included, you would have to cancel your subscription 24 hours before the deadline. So just a heads up out there. I was able to do that. So, you know, I heard a mixed bag. You know, I heard people signing up for it. Actually, Joe Habib and a couple other people did videos or I talked to them via messaging about them watching Bellator the night before. And then, you know, having issues with the live stream. A lot of people said that the stream for the undercard, and this kind of makes sense because this is how it's been for years, that the undercard always comes in really good and there's not a lot of issues, if any at all. Sometimes it's crystal clear, but then once the main attraction comes up, right, and Anthony Joshua and Povetkin are in the ring, it gets flooded, you know, and then all of a sudden there's some issues. So there was some buffering when it's live anyway. There's buffering issues. People are having problems actually getting it to work on their actually television. A lot of people said that on their phone or on their computer or iPad, it was okay. It did the job. Some said we could never put it on our TV. So it is what it is. I wasn't going to be able to watch it live because of my work. You know, I was working at that time. So I just waited and I figured, well, I've already seen the fight on a decently recorded live stream, right? It was okay. But I figured I'm going to wait. And much like Facebook, whether it's Facebook Watch for Golden Boy or some of the other outlets like Showtime and Thompson Boxing, when they have Facebook or YouTube, a lot of times, you know, when they have the live streams, I don't always watch the live stream like I'm just explaining. Sometimes I go in there and get the archive, and I found that you have a lot less flaws in the video on the archive. Because when it's broadcasting live, it's just different than it is archive. So if they have some issues, not to say you'll never have any issues watching the replay on the archive, but there was only two glitches that lasted a couple of seconds for the whole fight. Now, that's only not even seven rounds. Just a heads up, when it comes to Facebook, when it comes to any of this streaming stuff, even like my new DirecTV stream, I do streaming for DirecTV. A lot of times I have to DVR a game. Otherwise, when I watch it live, there is potentially issues, especially a more popular game, an SEC game or a Big Ten game. You know, those are going to be watched by more people on the stream. So either way, though, I can't sit there and tell you that I had issues with the DAZN replay because I didn't. But that is the replay. Like I said, I did it late Monday night. No, early Tuesday. Just to be able to get that free month just in case. And now the World Boxing Super Series has been picked up. We know that. But George Groves and Kellyanne Smith will be on there. And that is, like I said, noon. Noon Central. So, you know, that would be 10 o'clock, you know, Pacific time and 1 o'clock Eastern, obviously. So the cool thing I liked about it, just like ESPN Plus, and I found the same with ESPN Plus watching the actual recorded archive version, a lot less issues, you know, a lot less issues than the live stream. So, but I like how you can go in there, and as long as you just go right under watch on the ESPN Plus app, it won't show a result. If you go under boxing first, then you'll see a result. But if you could just put that thing on and boom, go right to it, it's pretty cool. And same with DAZN. You went in there and actually, like, I may have hit an extra button on my way in there signing in. I'm not sure as I was registering and all that, but the video just started right when I finally got in there. I didn't even have to hit the video. So I don't know if the last fight card just automatically starts playing. I don't know. That'd be a way to get some views. That's for sure. But anyway, overall, I was okay with DAZN. Now, as far as live streaming, that's an issue. As far as putting it on your TV live streaming, potentially could be an issue. So not really sure when it comes to that. So all in all, though, successful you know, a successful outing, no doubt about it, for Anthony Joshua. And you might as well just book it. Dillian White, part two. They may have to drop the tickets just a little bit if they, you know, because 100, that now, Dillian White is more popular than Povetkin, so maybe they won't have to. But if they want to go to 100,000, because that was their thing, they're going to add 10,000 seats. If they want to go to 100,000 in April, you know, maybe they have rivalry in the fact that it was a good first fight and the fact that White's name has, you know, prospered since. Maybe they will sell out all 100,000. We'll see. But anyway, that's who I think he'll fight. I don't see Wilder. I don't see them getting this deal done before December unless Eddie Hearn opens up percentage points. Then I think they can really negotiate. But who knows? As far as Showbox goes, Irvin Gonzalez and Carlos Romas actually was a okay fight. Irvin Gonzalez is a prospect, age 22, now moves to 11-0 with 9 KOs. All three scorecards, I believe, were 78-72. He boxed pretty well. Started going to the body, using good distance, kind of mixing it up with his jab. Mostly landed his jab. Was busier, but really just stick and move. Didn't really go out of his way to throw many punches or even try to finish him. But over eight rounds, he landed 72 punches to 38. It was just, you know, busier. So Irvin Gonzalez moves to 11-0. He's a prospect that a lot of people have talked about to an extent. Maybe I shouldn't say a lot, but I've heard, you know, I've heard some talk back and forth. What was the first fight? Well, the James Wilkins versus Misael Lopez. That was a pretty interesting fight for moments anyway. I thought Lopez was pretty much winning the fight with quick combinations, getting better of the exchanges. Also the jab and hook, you know, that to the head and body, that was basically a lot of his combinations. Wilkins, though, they're both unbeaten prospects. Wilkins got a low, he went to the, you know, he went low a lot and finally got deducted in the fifth round. But, you know, when he actually got deducted, it was low, but it could have been borderline because of how high Lopez's trunks were. Lopez really was sparked after that, too. He came out just throwing bombs. Good little back and forth down the stretch of this fight. I did think Wilkins actually should have got a knockdown on Lopez. There was an exchange. I think it was a right hand that landed on Lopez. And he touched his glove, clearly. The ref missed it. And then that was the seventh round. The eighth round, Wilkins came out swinging for the fences. A really good scrap down the stretch. Decent fight, though. Nothing to necessarily write home about. Wesley Ferrer and Steven Ortiz was a pretty slow fight, but competitive. I thought Ortiz got off to a better start maybe through the first four or five rounds, but there was just not a whole lot of lands that you could go, oh, yeah, that was good, you know. Ferrer, Wesley, I think it's Ferrer, he came in undefeated. Both of them were undefeated. He landed to the body decently, but the jabs and left hands and, you know, body work as well from Ortiz, Steven Ortiz, separated him. He started throwing more combinations. I thought, though, that, you know, Wesley did get into the fight a little bit later. I gave him the sixth round. Ortiz, I gave him the seventh and eighth. The fight kind of moved on the inside, but it really didn't get any better. So it was a slow fight, 5-3, 4-4 maybe. And I had it 5-3 for Ortiz. I think one card had it 76-76. The other two had it 78-74 and 77-75. What else we got here? There's one other, well, there's two other fights, wasn't it? Or wait, did I already? Yeah. So there's, it was just the main event. That's right. So Foster and Fernandez. Foster, I've seen him fight before. He came into the fight 13-2. with 8 KOs. John Fernandez was, you know, has been on Showbox before and came in as kind of a guy that was an action-packed fighter, throwing a ton of punches. He came in 16-0, 14 KOs, and I thought actually got off to a decent start, but never really could do much past the second round. The counter left hand and the movement, and this was like not just stick and move, this was like counter and move, but he was moving a whole lot, and Fernandez could just not cut off the ring. And the, like I said, counter left, some jabs. I'd say the third and fourth were closer. You did see Fernandez the last couple of rounds, though, close really well. Last few rounds, he fought better. All three judges, I believe, had it 98-92. Foster, though, the jab, like I said, the counter, his defense in general with his foot and his head movement, upper body movement. But the fight picked up a little bit, but just not quite enough. You know what I mean? Not quite enough. Foster landed 145 to 102 through 407. Fernandez was busier at 619, but he landed 16%. And he was throwing like 80 or 90 or 100 punches per round in his last fight. The one thing Fernandez did was go to the body. He landed 42 compared to 22. Punches on that, but Foster's jab and the counter ability, like I said, defense, 49-13, he outlanded him, did Foster over Fernandez on the jab in general. So that was a nice little upset, you know, definitely a nice upset. And, you know, the other fight that I, where's my scorecard for the other, one more fight I want to talk about, which was the best fight of the weekend. From Japan, Kazuto, I think it's, I'm going back in my notes, actually. I gotta straighten up here. Where is this damn? Okay. So the champion was, heading into the fight, WBO flyweight champ was Sho Kimura. And Tanaka, I think it's Tanaka. That was the challenger in this fight. I believe this is his third. Tanaka won, but this is his third. I think it's his third weight class already. This was bantamweight. Or I'm sorry, flyweight. I just said that earlier. WBO flyweight. And I heard a little bit about this fight and didn't preview it on my last show. And all of a sudden I got some messages. And I started seeing it pop up online, and I didn't know who won it. I actually tweeted this fight yesterday. I think I put it on Facebook. I tweeted it. I also linked in it. I linked in if you want to link in with the fight. This is one of the best fights of the year. Now, Tanaki, I thought, probably won the first three rounds, clearly. Both guys were attacking the body, the jabs in the left hands and the left and right combination to the body were really nice by Tanaki. Overhand rights by Kimura and hooks to the body as well. He had the shoeshine hooks to the body that he'd throw a lot. The jab was still pumping in the second, but then Tanaki added uppercuts. But, you know, the second round was one of the better rounds because you had Kimura opening up with his big shots too, landed body shots as well. Really nice left hook and hard right hand midway point. But I think there was later in that second round, a left hook definitely buzzed, full-on stumbled the champion, Kimura. And I thought, okay, well, this is a good fight, but right now, the hand speed, and he actually added straight right hands then, too, from Tanaka. The hand speed, the body work, the hooks, it was just too much. It really looked like that, even though the second round was competitive. But the fourth round, that was, I thought, the first round. That's what I was trying to say. Kimura, the first and the fourth. his left hooks to the body and finally the head now, I thought won the fourth round. Early and late, he did enough in that. The fifth round was close, but once again, I thought those left hooks to the body and head were the difference. They actually started backing Tanaki up for once. The sixth round could have went either way. That was a really tight one. Seventh round, once again, highly competitive. But the combinations to the head and body in a couple of really good exchanges, but I thought the champion fought himself back into this fight. And it felt like in the seventh round that you could see him in the corner, Tanaki. It seemed like he was wearing down. His mouth started opening up a little bit. I thought, man, I wonder if this guy, this young dude can overcome this, because it seemed like he started to fade. But that was the seventh round. Eighth round, he picked up the pace, quick combinations, just busier. Now, the ninth round was a two-way round. I just thought that Tanaki was busier through all of it, you know. 10th round, competitive as shit. But by that time, Tanaki had added so much movement, that little in-and-out reset, that it was really tough for Kimura to sustain a combination. You know, he'd land one, and then can you throw more? Nope, because the guy's on the move. Tanaki. So, really fun stuff down the stretch of this fight again. Landing some hard shots was Tanaki in the 11th and the 12th. He was starting to just time them with some shots that were pretty damn impressive. Now, Kimura, especially in the 12th, he did rally, but a huge right hand kind of stunted that rally in the 12th. So overall, Tanaki won the fight 114-114, one draw round, which I didn't see, or draw scorecard, which I didn't really see that to be the case. But 115-113 and 116-112. I had an 8-4 for Tanaki. Some people are saying, hey, it's his third, you know, his third championship division and third belt at, you know, at different weight classes. Maybe he should be in the pound for pound. No matter what, this was just a really good fight, and you should definitely check it out, man. It was a spirited fight. These guys were crisp. You know, you could tell maybe they didn't throw 100 punches, you know, a piece per round, but who cares? You know, who really cares when it comes to that? Because these guys, it seemed like everything they threw, you could tell it was landing hard. And it was just a good fight, man. It was just a good fight. So that about wraps it up for the weekend fight. Really busy weekend. We're going to get into some news before we talk about the George Groves versus Callum Smith World Boxing Super Series Championship for 168. Does this crown the best super middleweight in the world? No, definitely in the country, but not in the world. No, I don't believe so anyway. I'm really glad they were able to still, you know, make this fight happen, because obviously some injuries, they both fought in the winter. And the Usyk fight, you know, with Gassiev got pushed back and because of injuries. And so did this. George Groves had that dislocated shoulder. So you kind of think, man, I don't know. You know, like, are we good here? You know, like, and they tried the June date. Then it was July. Then they set it back. So I think that Groves has had enough. We'll also talk about the Showbox card in the PBC on FS1 on Sunday. And a reminder to the hardcore fight fan, this fight will be basically lunch hour, right around that time, right before lunch for the West Coast, right around lunch for Central and Eastern time. George Groves, Callum Smith on DAZN. So just a heads up. Tonight on Facebook Fight Night Live, there's a card from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So, you know, we'll take a look at some other stuff going on as well. Let's get to some of this news. Now, as far as Canelo goes, right, as we know, going into this fight, Jermall Charlo had become the mandatory for the WBC for Golovkin's belt at that time, the WBC middleweight title, right? We knew that. We also knew that the WBC had given permission, you know, for Golovkin as long as he's going to fight Canelo next. Now, obviously, it got a little sidetracked, but, you know, because of Canelo's issues. But, you know, they were going to allow that to happen. And obviously, it's a big fight. The first fight was a draw. So, of course, you're going to let that happen. I think that's a pretty smart idea. And don't mind me. I'm actually just moving around real quick. This is kind of a random show that I just thought of last night to do during the day because we're going to have somebody upgrade our internet and it should be stopping by here soon. So I had to do it a little bit earlier. Not going to be able to do it after work because I'm going to do a show tomorrow on some other stuff. But anyway, let's get back to what I was saying. So it sounds like basically, so whoever won this fight, if they wanted to keep their WBC belt, you had to fight Jermall Charlo. Charlo fought Hugo Centeno for the interim belt. So he has the interim belt. But they sounded like they were pretty tough on stripping. Now that was, you know, in the spring. You know, late spring, early summer. Now that, you know, Canelo has the belt, how will they go along with this stuff? So it sounds like the WBC is going to clarify Canelo versus Charlo. They are going to clarify it at the upcoming WBC convention. And that starts, it begins September 30th in the Ukraine. So yeah, September 30th is right around the corner. And so we should get some news. And just to piggyback off this Canelo stuff, he has been cleared to be able to fight December 15th. You know, we knew he got cut. We knew he was in a physical fight with Golovkin, you know, not long ago. Sometimes you get suspended just because, you know, they say, hey, for 4 months you're out or 6 months you're out, you know. But that wasn't the case. So he has been medically cleared to fight December 15th. Now, there is rumors that Canelo still owes a regular HBO fight to HBO as an option there. Well, I shouldn't say an option because that would be different. If he owes it, he owes it. Maybe there's an option on his potential next fight. We don't know. As of right now, it hasn't been clarified. Canelo and De La Hoya have made it known that, you know, they're okay with renegotiating a deal with HBO to sign. You know, a lot of people think, well, Canelo's almost a free agent off of HBO, and it sounds like Gennady Golovkin is a free agent. So will HBO, be able to keep them both? Who knows? We'll see. We know on the Golovkin side, they didn't feel like of late that they backed, HBO didn't necessarily back them financially for that Martirosyan fight and just in general of late or whatever, but they definitely backed them for quite some time. Of course, they could have backed them, you know, against Danny Jacobs and Lemieux and had it on normal HBO instead of making those on paper. So it is what it is. Anyway, and recently, Oscar, you know, he said HBO is still the biggest brand in boxing. Talked about, you know, the average rating, and he has a point on the average rating. Now, once Fox, you know, starts their deal for, you know, 10 per year, those will obviously outrate anything HBO could do. But he has a point as far as on average rating. The ESPN ratings have been kind of hit or miss. Even though it doesn't get talked about like the PBC ratings, they have been hit or miss. And this year they haven't had just a big fight night without, for the most part, without a solid lead-in. You know, the Lomachenko-Linares fight, that was one of them that really had a good rating without having a major, you know, lead-in. They had a minor lead-in. I think it was college baseball. But nothing to write home about. But anyway, we're going to find out here soon a little bit as they clarify whatever the hell that means. There shouldn't be any kind of clarification. You know, they had already said whoever wins this fight. Now, it doesn't mean Charlo can't, you know, be given step-aside money. That's a potential. Because a lot of people think they're going to match up Canelo with, you know, with Lemieux, David Lemieux, on December 15th. So December 15th is held for Canelo, like we mentioned the other day, for the MGM Grand in Vegas and also Madison Square Garden in New York. So we'll keep you posted as we hear news. More news just to kind of get through this segment here on this shortened show on a Tuesday. Wilder and Fury is official December 1st. Showtime pay-per-view, and it's down to the Staples Center in Mandalay Bay. Now, those are the last two that they were battling out for. I guess the Barclays has something booked, and same with the T-Mobile in Vegas on December 1st. I want to say it was like a Janet Jackson concert or something in Brooklyn. I can't remember. But that has been the issue to try to find out if they can maneuver those dates or if they're just going to have to find something else. So it's taking a little bit here, no doubt about it. It sounds like October 1st. Did they say October 1st London? Is that what it is? So that would be Monday. So October 1st, this coming Monday, would be the kickoff. Then they're going to go to New York and L.A. There has been a rumored extra city added on the press tour. Not sure if that's going to happen, whether that's Chicago or Houston or Miami or Atlanta, some sort of bigger city. And, you know, Chicago, Houston, and Miami would be interesting. We talked about that a while ago. I would like that just to mix it up a little bit. So we'll see if it's Staples Center or Mandalay Bay. They probably already know. They're just going to announce it officially. Now, as far as the rumored fights or names on the undercard, there's been a lot of rumors. Some of them, it looked like, you know, one of them was reported by a couple of sources saying the dream scenario would be, you know, Leo Santa Cruz and Guerrero Russell Jr. on the undercard. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the dream scenario, but the overhead, I don't know if they could. You know, I doubt that fight would happen, especially when you could create a really nice gate, $1 million gate probably, you know, at Staples Center. So don't get me wrong. I would love them to repeat the undercard of Mayweather-Canelo and have, you know, a Garcia-Matisse type fight. And that's what that would be. That would be to claim the best featherweight in my mind. You know what I mean? I really think that. So I don't think that's going to happen, though. Who knows? We've heard Jared Hurd. Then we've heard that that's not going to happen. We've heard Keith Thurman against Zab Judah or Jose Cito Lopez. And Jose Cito Lopez has been in the running for quite some time. We'll see. I could see Keith Thurman against Jose Cito Lopez or Zab Judah on the undercard. That would be a fight that would make a little bit more sense. Financially, you know, it's obviously there's you know, money that you need to guarantee up front for Wilder and Fury, and you just wonder, you know, how much money is going to be able to go to that undercard. Don't get me wrong, I would love it if they had Leo Santa Cruz on that card, but I'd also love it if it just happened this, you know, in December or January and it was on Showtime or Fox too. So it is what it is when it comes to that. We'll fill you in when we hear more. What else we got here? Oh, as far as the Canelo-Golovkin, I forgot to mention this in the Canelo segment. Canelo and Golovkin, As far as two big numbers that stand out, it sold at least 1.1. This is the news out there. It's not official, but from a couple of different sources, 1.1 million buys, good enough for $94 million. So a lot of people, they just can't wrap their head around Canelo and Joshua, who's the biggest star. But if you do a million in the UK, we know that doesn't add up to a million here. So I think Canelo's kind of proven. They only sold, 16,000-17,000 tickets rather than the 80 and 90. You know, this is kind of – for the people that still don't get, the fact that you can create a larger gate in Vegas, this is a prime example once again. The gate rendered $23 million. It was down from what was the other one, 27? So it was down to 23 mil, but still going to be more than, you know, what Josh was able to produce in that big stadium. So it just that's just the nature of the business. I'm not trying to say anything other than facts here. You know what I mean? But the $94 million as far as pay-per-view revenue, even though it did 200,000 less, the first one was rumored 1.3. Even though it did 200,000 less buys, it still made more money because they charged more overall. It was available in over 450,000 movie theaters as well, and that's where I actually saw it. So that's a little bit more info there. So 1.1, still a million pay-per-views, dude. That's huge. And there was a delay. Some of the buzz went away because of the delay. It had been a year since they fought, the suspension. So it is what it is. And, you know, they upped the prices too. Couple other bits of news here. ESPN Plus, and this is really no surprise now that football season has started, but ESPN Plus recently put out a press release saying they now have 1 million subscribers. They passed the 1 million mark on ESPN Plus. A couple of months ago, this is 5-6 months, something like that, that they've accomplished that. A couple of months ago, we read about 200,000 or 300,000. Obviously, with football, college football starting, that was going to bring that was going to be the biggest hitter. Even though the ESPN Plus doesn't have the top marquee matchups, they still have several conferences that show a lot of their games on that. And when you're an alumni of one of these smaller D1 schools, whether it's in the MAC or the Ivy League or, you know, just a couple of different smaller conferences, but still, you know, D1, the alumni, you know, they know that they don't, for years, they followed their team that they want, you know, what they want the college to. They're cheering their college team. But they couldn't see it all the time on ESPN and Fox and FS1 and that type of thing. CBS has an SEC deal. You figured that ESPN Plus would definitely add a lot here. And it sounds like they did because, you know, it's perfect for those mid-level games, football games. And as we know, football is king in America. So kudos to ESPN Plus. What's the other bit of news I was going to get? Oh, this is kind of interesting. Last week we talked about Garcia and Comey, Mikey Garcia, Richard Comey. There was a postponement, and the postponement for their potential purse bid is now October. So, you know, the camps still have up until, I forget, it's really up until the purse bid almost. I forgot the cutoff, whether it's 24 hours or a handful of hours, I don't really remember. But they still have time to make Mikey Garcia and Richard Comey. And Comey, Richard Comey, is the mandatory. So I don't know for the WBC belt for Mikey. So I don't know if Mikey's still kind of just lingering and trying to buy some time to see if he can get that Spence fight early next quarter. Or he's just going to take this fight and try to chase Loma in the spring, because Bob Arum, you know, he even talked to Robert Garcia, Mikey's brother, saying, hey, let's make this fight happen. And I think you should try to call their bluff and see if you can get this fight to happen. But we'll fill you in on that, you know, as the news come in. Now, as far as the other cards, I already mentioned the Facebook Fight Night Live tonight. What is that, Thompson Boxing then? I believe so. Don't quote me on that. ESPN Plus has a card as well. Uzgadaji and Jerwin Unkaos. I forgot how to say his name. But they have fights, but they're, you know. Alejandro Santiago is Jerwin's opponent. And Madernia. God, where do I know that name? That's Jose Uzgadaji. The problem is, Uzgadaji is a champion at 168. He's fighting a non-title fight, 10-rounder, at light heavyweight. So, something, you know, that's the thing about this ESPN Plus. They have like 36 shows or something like that. But, you know, some of them are going to be like this, stay busy fights. Some of them will be good fights from, you know, from overseas. Some of them will be good top rank cards. But this is one where you go, some of this stuff is filler. Joshua Greer, who signed with Top Rank. Cervania, who actually fought really good against Oscar Valdez. He's taking on Carlos Carlson as well on the undercard. So just something to keep an eye on anyway. That's Friday night. Also Friday night, Devin Haney and Juan Carlos Burgos fight a 10-rounder in the Showbox main event. And I like this fight. Juan Carlos Burgos has been around the block. He was the guy who knocked down Mikey, right? He's been around the block. He fought a fair amount on ESPN as well, ESPN Friday Night Fights back then. He's a quality fighter, solid fighter, nothing that stands way out about him. But, hey, I like it for Devin Haney's development. It's a 10-rounder. And also Matthijs and Hamazaran, I think it's Hamazaran, that was a fight happened several months ago, and that was a bad, bad decision. There was a robbery that took place. Now there's a rematch. And I actually confused it with Showbox's card last week, so that's my bad. I meant to say that. This rematch from a robbery is actually on this card. But the main event is Devin Haney and Juan Carlos Burgos. There's still 90 seconds left to call in. 646-381-4990 is the number to call. We're not going to go too much further, though. I may add, I saw a couple of people jumping in. What's going on, everybody? Kind of random afternoon show, but sometimes life gets in the way. Schedules kind of mix up, and I had to do a show today. We're supposed to get our internet fixed either early this morning or later tonight, so I don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, there's also a fight card on Facebook Watch from Indio, California. Jorge Linares against Abner Cotto. So this is a bounce-back fight for Jorge Linares. This is part of the Golden Boy series. It's a little bit of a disappointing fight, to be honest with you. Now, the undercard fights, I'm not totally familiar with some of these guys, so hopefully it turns out to be some good competitive fights there. But the main event, Abner Cotto, we've seen him around, no doubt about it. It's not that it's a horrible fight, but for something that Golden Boy and Oscar made a big deal about, saying it's going to change the game, and, you know, it's an opportunity to do something, and it's an opportunity to get views out there that maybe sometimes, especially a younger generation, won't always see boxing. And I think it's, like I said, maybe this card turns out to be action-packed. That happens, you know? But if your main event is Linares and Cotto, I just feel like you should match something with it that's better, that is a little bit more recognizable. But, hey, it may turn out. Also, Juan Carlos Paz and Jorge Pazes Jr., from Mexico City. Bein Sports en Español. A lot of people are pissed off that DirecTV knocked them off. So that's a lot of action. And, of course, on DAZN in the States, World Boxing Super Series Final, George Groves, Callum Smith. Big fight, no doubt about it. I still think there's some, like I mentioned earlier, there's still some fights to be, you know, some fights to be figured out at 168 to really, you know, crown the true lineal number one guy. But this is a good fight. Callum Smith is a guy that is still untested. He's kind of just living off, at this point, potential, I'd have to say. That's not to say that he's not fully capable of winning this fight. Big fight. It was going to be in the UK. It was a big fight for the UK fans, no doubt about it. But the biggest thing here, I just think George Groves has more options. We've seen him be able to counter and swing it out, exchange. We've also seen him build a box really nice on the outside. I think that's obviously, you know, a better thing. When he jabs the right hands, like I said, the counter shots, there's times where sometimes he gets in trouble getting into exchanges and trying to, you know, light it up with somebody. But we'll see. You know, I really think the shoulder is the biggest obstacle for picking this fight. George Groves has kind of rejuvenated his career with some decent wins of late. Got his, you know, after a couple of different shots at a title, he managed to get the title a little while back last summer, actually. I think he's a better overall fighter. But that's not to say that, you know, that Callum Smith is bummy or something like that. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to say he doesn't have a chance, because he does. He does. Now, he's got a height advantage. I believe he's got a reach advantage as well. Standing at 6'3", will Callum Smith turn George into the come-forward fighter? If he can manage that, I think that's his best shot. I mean, obviously Groves gets caught sometimes in exchanges and it turns the fight and he ends up getting stopped, right? We've seen it before. But that was also against certain fighters, you know. Carl Froch is a Hall of Famer, you know what I mean? So, and he also had him hurt. But if Callum Smith can turn this into an exchange fest, I don't know who that works for best, actually. Because it's not like Callum Smith is knocking dudes out left and right. Neither of the guys are known for having major power. I think on the outside, if Callum Smith can be busy and use his feet, use his defense, and use that reach, that height, I think that's his best, you know, potential now to win the fight. I think that's his best game plan. The problem is, when you look at his record, Rocky Fielding is really the fight that stands out. You go, oh, wow, that's a big win for him. That was a couple of years ago, I think about 3 years ago coming on. Rocky Fielding was undefeated at that time. It was a TKO, early stoppage. Rocky Fielding actually has come back and put some wins together. but other than that, you look, Eric Skoglund, you know, Luke Blackledge. I actually saw that fight now that I think about it. He just, I don't know, 24 fights. And you could say, okay, Rocky Fielding was a testing point that, you know, Rocky Fielding, that's a good name, but it was a one-round fight. So how much really experience did he get out of that? So I think George Groves, you know, there's going to be some spirited moments. Callum Smith is a measured fighter, but he's not afraid to let his combos go. I just think Groves is going to catch him with something to where it will make Callum a little more hesitant. Like I said, if Smith can get on his bike and move and try to outbox him, that's probably the best because Groves coming forward. I'm not saying he can't come forward because he can, but he generally likes to set things up. He really likes for a fighter to come to him. Like I said, though, sometimes he gets in exchanges, and he's got pop. He's got power, but his chin doesn't always hold up. But I just think the more experience, the more, you know, like he's been through the wars. Now, he hasn't always come out on top. He's come out laying on his back, as Groves, but battle tested, more experience. I believe on the inside to an extent, and on the outside, he's got the advantage. I'm going George Groves, and I'm going to go by a clean decision, right around 8-4. I think Groves will pick up that victory. Just going to stop by BoxingScene.com real quick and make sure there isn't any kind of breaking news. I don't believe there's going to be. I know there's no breaking news. So, is there anything else? I think I got everything I wanted to get to. October is steady, but there's not too many fights that necessarily stand way out. Of course, BJ Saunders and Demetrius Andre, that stands out to me. Oh, by the way, I did want to mention this. Eddie Hearn, Matchroom Sports, Eddie Hearn talked about he was going to have another deal, a global deal. And what that turns out to be is Matchroom USA, Matchroom Sports USA, you know, through DAZN, you know how they have 16 cards here? I believe those 16 cards, now it might be a mix of stuff. It may not just be the U.S. stuff. But he has 16 cards per year that is going to be streamed on DAZN Canada. And I thought that that was already in place. I must have been, you know, the way they made it sound is I can watch sports that are available in Germany and Japan and Canada, not NFL, but so that's official now. So it's an 8-year deal, very similar. Basically, hey, by the way, you can watch it there. So it does give Canadians a cheaper outlet than having to pay for pay-per-view. Because I know a lot of fights you got to pay for pay-per-view there. Also, Billy Joe Saunders got fined £100,000. I think it is. I don't know. No, I don't. I'm just messing with you. £100,000. $100,000. I don't think it's that. But for his antics with the homeless lady or the chemically dependent lady, I'll say, that he was just basically harassing and messing with, yada, yada, yada. He filmed it, too. That was the thing. So those two notes, I think, stand out. Anyway, enjoy the fights this weekend. Friday is a big fight night this weekend, that's for sure. That's where a lot of it. Oh, and you know what? I forgot to mention, I didn't talk about the PBC on FS1. Let's just talk about that fight real quick. Molina versus Ortiz. Now that, it's Sunday night, which they've done those FS1 cards every once in a while on Sunday night. I just think that's like a barn burner. It's a perfect winner goes home, crossroads fights. I don't have a problem with it. To be honest with you, this is the type of fight that I like on FS1. I've said it this year about Fox, most of their cards, I kind of felt like they felt like Fox, you know, FS1 cards, not Fox cards. So Victor Ortiz versus John Molina Jr., 12-round fight. That'll be interesting. Brandon Figueroa has a somewhat step-up fight against Ogden. That might be his best opponent. Joy Joyce goes against, Kaladzi? That dude who's a Polish dude. I think he's from Africa, or is it Haiti, but he represents Poland. He's just an action-packed type fighter. That's a good test, 8-round test for Joe Joyce. Also, Carlos Bedros, Joey Spencer. DeGale stays busy as well. Effa, the guy who had that dude run out of the ring with him, he is on the card as well. So I do like the Joy Joyce and the Figueroa. I think that those are actually decent opponents at their level. In action-packed, basically, I think someone's getting knocked out. It's not even a 10-rounder. It's a 12-rounder. So I think Ortiz and Molina, someone's getting knocked out there. Anyway, I'm going to call it a day. It's a short show. Enjoy the fight, and we'll be back next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, when as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the holdback, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, I made it. I'm going to show you it's this. So I'm going to get any dollar worth.